This is Captured by the Game, a supernatural fanfic written by Rivka T, read by Raina Jenkins. The story is rated NC-17, pairing Sam Dean, with warnings for boy sex, swearing, and mentions of torture. Father gave him the assignment just after his 22nd birthday. "This is your test," he said, with that jocular tone that so often promised a bloodletting. "Screw this up, and you're out of the running. Pull it off, and you might just be the heir apparent." "And get a haircut," he added, as if it were an afterthought. "You wouldn't want the hunter mistaking you for Bigfoot." Sam only kept himself from hunching down and pushing his hair out of his eyes by locking every muscle tight. If Father had really objected to the bangs, he would have told one of the others, and Sam would have woken up one morning with a lie in his hair, or worse. The real problem was Father's threat and promise. He'd never been so blatant before. He was probably lying. That was one of the basic lessons, never to believe anything you hadn't confirmed through your own means. But he was more likely to be lying about the benefits of success than the costs of failure. Now that they were all adults, Father was separating the wheat from the chaff with everything but an actual flail. In the past 6 months, 7 of Sam's siblings had shuffled off this mortal coil, and Sam had only taken out 2 of them. "What's to stop Ava from coming after me while I'm off doing your dirty work?" Sam asked. Father smiled. "That's part of the challenge." Forced back out into the mundane world, unable to study and told to win the trust of some random hunter whose importance Father wouldn't even explain, it was enough to make him wonder whether Father wasn't setting him up for elimination. Of course, Sam was the pick of the litter, but that wasn't an unmixed blessing for the current leader of the pack. Father gestured, indicating an end to the audience. He turned to leave. "Samael." He froze. When he counted up his grievances against Father, the first was always that stupid, pretentious name. "Yes, Father," he said, forcing his body to stillness. "Don't get dumb. Just because you won't see me doesn't mean I won't see you." He nodded woodenly. Father could throw anything he wanted in Sam's path. Sam wasn't going to stumble. If this was a real opportunity, he was going to squeeze it until it burst. If it was a diversion, he was going to use the chance to hone his powers far from prying eyes. "I'm looking for Dean Winchester," he told the bartender, a pretty enough blonde with a scowl that didn't quite hide the way her eyes lingered on his arms and his chest. Even slumped down in his college kid sweatshirt and jeans, he knew he stood out, so he didn't blame her for looking. "Dean?" she asked, halfway between suspicious and surprised. "Over there," she gestured, "but..." He followed her pointing finger to the emptiest recesses of the bar and stopped in his tracks. "There is a god," was probably the most inappropriate thing he could have thought. Far from the broken-down redneck Sam had been expecting, Winchester was gorgeous. It was impossible to tell the color of his eyes in the bad light, but they were framed by lashes that wouldn't have been out of place on a fashion model. His lips were plump and pink, as if anticipating what kisses would do to them, and his heavy stubble made Sam's thighs itch to feel those cheeks against his own skin. Get his trust, right. Sam could do that. As he approached, Sam saw the spray of freckles across Winchester's nose. This couldn't be a gift from Father, but it certainly was wrapped nicely. Winchester brought his gaze up from his beer when Sam was a few paces away, his eyes unerringly finding Sam's as if he'd heard Sam coming through all the ambient noise of the bar. They were green. "Yeah?" Winchester asked, breaking Sam's inexplicable paralysis. "Dean Winchester?" he asked, putting extra hesitation into his voice and bringing his shoulders in tight. "My name is Sam Marshall. Can I talk to you?" Winchester tilted his head. "Don't stop now." Even though he hadn't been invited, Sam grabbed a chair from the nearby table and pulled it up to Winchester's. When he sat, their knees nearly touched. "You might be wondering how I know your name," he began. Winchester shook his head. "I saw you talking to Joe." Sam stopped again. Pretty or not, this man was a member of a dying breed, deluded into thinking that what a loner did might somehow matter in the great wars between angels and demons. His intransigence should not be derailing Sam's plans. Up close, the green of his irises was ringed with a darker color, almost black. "I dream about you," he blurted out, and then wanted to smash his forehead into the table. He might have done it if Winchester's empty beer glass hadn't been in the way. Surprisingly, Winchester didn't laugh at him. The wariness was not much better, even if it was accompanied by a slight flush. Okay, Sam could still get his basic cover out, even if it had started like a bad pickup line. "A couple months back, I started having these dreams. I thought they were dreams, just imaginary. But then I saw a story in the paper, and I found out the things I'd seen had been happening. All of them. After I dreamed them." Winchester examined him like he was a rattlesnake. "And this is connected to me how?" "You were in them. You were fighting. You were hunting ghosts." Winchester leaned over and gestured toward the bar, not looking at Sam. "Dude, I don't know what your problems are, but they aren't mine." "Time to play the concerned ingenue." "You're in danger," Sam said, widening his eyes as he leaned forward to put his hand on Winchester's wrist. It was like touching Lily, back before Sam figured out how to shut her down, except that this shock was warm and golden. They both stared down at his hand. Winchester was a big enough man that his wrist didn't disappear into Sam's grip, but Sam could still have closed his fingers around Winchester's arm like a cuff. They were interrupted by the bartender, Joe, whose reason for failing to delegate the task to a waitress was immediately apparent. She put down two bottles of Domestic on the table, then settled into Winchester's lap, forcing Sam to drop Winchester's hand. Winchester grimaced, half in pleasure and half in embarrassment. "I'm off in 10, Joe said into his ear, loud enough for Sam to hear. Winchester's hands fluttered around Joe's body, struggling to find a place to touch her that wouldn't count as hitting a double or a triple. "Joe," he said, in the strained tone of a man with a diamond-edged hard-on. "You know I promised your mama I'd leave you alone."
"You were 17, she whined. "And if..."
Sam didn't know whether she was going to say, "if you really cared," or "if you asked her permission." But it was obvious that Winchester didn't, and wasn't going to, and Joe had the minimum of self-respect necessary to shut her up. She bit her lip and wriggled once more as she began to stand up, just to show him what he was missing. If a girl had tried that with Sam, she would have found herself getting pounded right on the creaky little bar table. Winchester was either the evangelical brand of hunter, or some other kind of crazy, because he just sucked in a breath and let her pull away. "I gotta talk to this guy," he said conciliatorially, indicating Sam. Sam gave her a little wave, barely triumphant at all. He got the hairy eyeball anyway. She did have a fine ass, snug in nice tight jeans and framed by the cutest little bar apron. When Sam turned back, Winchester was looking at him with mild disapproval. "Talk," he said. And now Sam was in a bit of a pickle. Father and his goddamn prohibition on letting Sam do any scrying in advance. The problems you'll be having, some of them you won't have any intel on. You've got to learn to react, my boy. Get your instincts working for you. The internet had proved unhelpful in determining Winchester's current activities. No shock there. He fucking hated what using his powers to see the future did to him, and years of experience counseled against making himself so vulnerable in the presence of others. But there wasn't much choice here. He concentrated, pretending that it didn't make his face scrunch up in a truly ridiculous manner, and opened the window in his mind. "A woman, a ghost," he said. "You're sitting in a car with her. She's in the passenger seat. She's wearing a white nightgown?" "What does she look like?" Winchester asked, hoarse, and Sam wished that he was good enough to open his eyes and still keep the vision. "She's beautiful. Mid-20s, maybe. Dark hair, olive skin. She's attacking you!" He snapped back into the now, needing to see Winchester's face whole and not writhing in desperate agony as the woman ripped the life out of him. The intrigue on Winchester's face was fading into disquiet. Winchester offered him a napkin from one of the beers, then pulled his hand back as he realized that it was already sodden with condensation.
He dug around in his pockets and came up with an honest-to-God handkerchief, shoving it at Sam. Sam looked at him, uncomprehending, and only then realized that his nose was bleeding. "Head back," Winchester said, scooting closer and putting his hand on Sam's shoulder, right at the junction of his neck. "Here." He tugged, easing Sam's head so his nose pointed up at the smoke-blackened wood in the ceiling, and brought Sam's hand up to pinch his nose closed. His fingers lingered over Sam's until Sam had a good grip, and then Winchester backed off, though Sam could still feel the heat rising off his body. "That happen every time you get a vision?" Winchester asked. The headache and dizziness were worth it, because Winchester was a believer now. Sam tried to nod without moving his head. "Pretty much," he got out. He could feel that the blood had stopped flowing, but he held on, just to work the sympathy angle. After a couple of minutes, he tilted his head back down. Winchester was examining him, as if he were a complicated series of runes. Sam wiped off the last of the blood, looked down at the ruined handkerchief, and decided not to hand it over. Any one of his siblings would have used the stained cotton to fuck him up badly. Winchester was unlikely to perform blood magic with it, but Sam had the feeling he didn't want it back anyway. "Okay," Winchester said, nodding and pushing back from the table and standing. He was only a few inches shorter than Sam. "I got a lead I need to track down." He paused. "So, you come in?" Sam stood, hunching to make himself look less threatening and more threatened, and followed. Winchester didn't explain why they drove halfway across the country, or why they stopped at the ugliest, orangest motel imaginable, but once they were in California, they found exactly what Sam had seen. "A woman in white, huh?" Sam said, as they leaned back against their seats afterwards. His distant curiosity was honest. His demonology was as advanced as any mortal since Al-Hazan, but he'd never bothered with the minor beasts and haunts. "Yep," Winchester said. Constance had been reunited with her children. That hadn't gone all that well for her. Sam wondered if his human mother had feared him, would fear him now. He had a picture of her, dark-haired and dark-eyed. When he'd been a kid, before Father had explained, Sam had sometimes imagined that his mother was coming for him, saying she loved him and always had. But he hadn't ever needed a mother to tell him that he was special, and even Father's divided attention was pretty intense. "What now?" Winchester asked. "You still need my help," Sam told him, a flat fact. Saying it like that was taking a risk, but Winchester had seemed grateful to have a partner on this. Well, Sam guessed it had been a hunt. He was a hunter now. "I can pay my own way. I've got some money saved up." Winchester chuffed and rolled his shoulders. "You don't have anywhere to be?" It wasn't enough of a direct question to justify trotting out a life story, and Sam wanted more time observing Winchester to see what would work best. "Nowhere but here," he said, daring a shy, quick grin, and settled back into the old leather of the car. Sam didn't want to push too soon, so he let Winchester take them to Colorado without much question. That was before Winchester showed him the records of the repeated disappearances, mostly attributed to bear attacks. He hadn't signed on for bears, or things that looked like bears, or things that did the kind of damage that got mistaken for bears. He was also disturbed by how cavalier Winchester was about making up a cover story. Winchester just walked into the ranger station, staring at the wall rather than meeting the ranger's eyes, and started asking about the not-quite-missing group of hikers. When his first bullshit story didn't go over, he just switched to the next one, visibly forcing himself to keep talking. Sam thought the ranger helped him out in the end because he was just so obviously desperate for the information. On the one hand, his indifference to plausibility suggested that Sam didn't have to worry overmuch about his own excuses. But Sam didn't want to get arrested for impersonating a federal officer or any of the other people Winchester seemed prepared to impersonate. He didn't even have a fake badge for Sam. Nonetheless, it was true that when Winchester showed his own fake ID, Haley Collins didn't bother to ask to see Sam's. Which was good, because the one Sam was holding also had a picture of Winchester, only this time he was a member of the U.S. Geological Survey. Given how Winchester lit up a room just by walking into it, Sam could see how an average person's trust could get him through a lot of these situations, though more confidence would have helped. The survivor from the 1982 attack was even easier than Haley, not even slightly suspicious. Winchester was awkward with him at first, too rough and accusing, until Sam stepped in and started asking the questions. But Roger Shaw was beyond the niceties. He'd been carrying around the truth about the thing that had killed his parents for decades, and he only wanted to admit it. The sight of those three claw marks distorting Shaw's chest made Sam nervous. He could repel anything he saw first, but that might take a lot of explaining, and even with his abilities, going into the forest to be hunted seemed horror movies stupid to him. When Winchester started pulling weapons out of his trunk and stuffing them into two bags, Sam tried to balk. "You don't even know what it is. How do you know guns will stop it?" Winchester stopped, looking back over his shoulder, and raised his eyebrows skeptically. "Your visions aren't telling you?" "I'm not some 24-hour news channel," he snapped, because, yes, he'd tried to look ahead, and there was nothing useful. Just blurry trunks and rushing darkness, and then a bright flash. All that at the price of a migraine. He'd never spent a lot of time trying to sharpen the visions, mostly because they were incapacitating enough that they made him a great target for his brothers and sisters. He'd expended more effort staving them off than bringing them on. Winchester already had his back to Sam, examining a semi-automatic, then returning it to its place in the car. "It had a physical effect on Shaw, right? Physical effect means physical vulnerability." Sam knew that wasn't entirely true, and opened his mouth to say so before he realized that he couldn't reveal that much expertise. His heart rate jumped when Winchester continued. "Unless it's some kind of demon, but a demon would have left the bodies to be found. Better scare value. So we're looking for something that can hit and be hit." "Fine," Sam bit out. "Let's get this over with." They hooked up with the Collins siblings and their guide, which Sam wanted to find reassuring. But Winchester's continued fumbling attempts to feign an obviously lacking woodscraft experience canceled out most of the confidence Sam otherwise would have felt. Winchester handed him one of the weapons bags at the beginning of the trek. After a couple hours, when it became apparent that neither Sam's shoes nor the feet in them were well equipped for hiking, Winchester waited for him to catch up and then just transferred the bag to his own free shoulder. Sam glared at Winchester's definitely not hiking boots. Winchester just started walking again, so there was nothing in it but to follow him. They were far enough away from the others that, once he could breathe without panting again, he figured the conversation might be possible. "How'd you get this job anyway?" he asked. "Found some coordinates," Winchester said. Well, wasn't he a chatty Cathy?
"Found where?"
Winchester sped up. Sam refrained from reaching out mentally to hold him in place. "My dad's journal," Winchester answered after another half a minute, when Sam failed to fall back. This sounded important. "Where's your dad now? Is he here? Are we meeting him?" The pain that washed over Winchester's face made Sam think, at first, that his father must be recently dead. "But, I don't know. I thought maybe, but if he'd have been here, there would have been a sign." With that, Winchester increased his pace yet again, crunching over leaves and branches with no evidence that he was even paying attention to where his feet went. Winchester didn't have any plans that required Sam, he reminded himself, which meant that Sam had to be the one to bend. "Look," he said, forcing his aching legs to move faster. "I know I just crashed into your life, but listen, it's the same for me. I didn't ask to wake up screaming 5 nights out of 7, watching you nearly get your guts torn out. I don't know what I'm doing, I admit that. You're so hot to help people, then help me. And maybe I can do something for you." Winchester wouldn't meet his eyes for the next hour. But when they stopped for a break, Winchester handed him the open bag of peanut M&Ms, then a canteen to wash the stickiness away. "Wake up screaming, huh?" he asked when Sam's mouth was still full. "I guess my life's pretty scary." Sam swallowed, thinking about the empty beds back home. "At least you're alive and fighting," he said. Fear wasn't anything special, or even shameful if it was justified. He'd spent most of his pre-puberty life terrified, mostly of the teachers. The bodies changed, but the black eyes always glittered the same. And then slowly pushed out as much of the fear as possible with anger, like water displacing oil. When he was 12, Father had started sending them out into the world. Shopping trips, museum expeditions, library visits. Always with goals, like the time they'd each been ordered to come back with a leather jacket without stealing it. Jake had produced a wad of cash whose provenance he'd never explained. Andy had ordered a woman to open her wallet for him. She'd collapsed after, but they hadn't stuck around to see what happened next. Sam had done what he'd needed to do. Lily had taken nearly 3 days to return, and she was different afterwards, but they'd all passed. Later, there had been more diffuse assignments and more individualized ones. In the summer of his 16th year, Sam had been tasked with getting the daughter of a local politician into a compromising position. She'd been 19, a spectacular beauty, and he'd been just starting another growth spurt, all bones and stumbles, so it had been a significant challenge. He'd finally approached her at the local pool. "You're from that funky boarding school," she'd said, smiling condescendingly in her blue and teal striped bikini. "The Xavier Institute for Higher Learning," he'd said. And then, when she frowned, "Sorry, private joke." He'd gotten the job done. Afterwards, the girl, Amy, her name was Amy, except maybe it had been spelled differently, he wasn't sure, had drowned in the pool despite the presence of 3 lifeguards. It was the local tragedy of the year. Sam had only found out about her death when Father had called him into the study to read out the eulogy delivered by the girl's pastor. "I hope you enjoyed that X-Men reference," Father had said, merry as ever. "It's a good thing she wasn't a comics fan, don't you think?" Sam had swallowed and nodded, because there was nothing else to do. So, yeah, he knew more about fear than Winchester thought. Sam felt it the moment Winchester was taken by the Wendigo. That instantaneous knowledge was troubling in and of itself, but it was subsumed by the immediate fear. Father would crucify him if he lost Winchester to a mindless killer. Whether or not Father was lying about his presence at Golgotha, Sam believed that he could make it last for days. Then he had to lead Ben Collins through the woods, even though he didn't know what they were going to find, and he was cold and dirty, and a new blister seemed to pop with every step he took. It had been easy enough to be confident among his siblings. They had known him all his life, and had reason to respect his power. Ben was just a scared guy out in the woods, with no reason to believe Sam other than the force of his will and the sight of a few peanut M&Ms marking a trail. At last, they found a tunnel. There was a warning sign. "Danger! Do not enter! Extremely toxic material!" Sam stared at it, almost disbelieving. If it wasn't a coincidence, something that had been put up while the Wendigo was quiescent, then there were people out in the world who had Father's sense of humor. The Wendigo's lair smelled like a latrine stuffed with rotten meat. Ben had to stop in the tunnel to gag, but Sam breathed through his mouth and pressed on. The ground under their feet was soft and unpleasantly squishy. They were 50 feet in when they heard the growl. Ben froze like prey. Sam knew that if the Wendigo saw him, it would find them both, so he grabbed Ben and shoved him up against the wall, where his silhouette wouldn't stand out. The Wendigo hesitated. Ben trembled. Sam wanted to snap his neck, even as he could feel his own muscles starting to shake. It loped towards them. Ben's mouth opened. Sam pressed his hand over nose and mouth together, suppressing all sound. Less than a dozen yards from them, the Wendigo swerved and disappeared down a side tunnel. Sam released Ben, but neither of them moved from the wall at first. After that, falling through the floor into a pile of skeletons seemed almost relaxing, even if Sam ended up with sliced hands and a cut on his cheek. The skeletons were evidence that they were near the Wendigo's feeding grounds. Sam stood, shaking off the bones trying to cling to him, and tried to find his way in the near darkness. There was a sort of electric humming at the back of his mind, a tremble like a compass needle near an iron bar. He found his flashlight and switched it on, pointing it in the direction his instinct demanded. Winchester and Haley were hung up like chickens in the window of a Chinatown restaurant. Sam hobble skipped over to them, Ben following. The boy was a rabbit, but he loved his sister, Sam thought. It was hard to imagine what that felt like. Sam scrabbled with the ropes. He hoped they were ropes and not the braided intestines of earlier victims, and Winchester twisted slowly. The motion started to rouse him. "Wake up!" Sam urged, as loud as he dared. Winchester's head turned slowly towards Sam. He blinked and his eyes widened. Sam realized that the ropes were just looped around Winchester, pulled tight by his own weight. He gritted his teeth, bent, and hoisted Winchester over his shoulder, ignoring the white-hot pain of his feet as he picked the ropes free. "Thanks," Winchester said when he was back on his feet, seeming more surprised than pleased. Sam understood that. Relying on somebody else's performance was a good route to a short, sharp shock. "Help me," Haley said. He turned and saw her pushing at yet another trust victim, the missing Tommy. Winchester tapped his arm, then put a large folding knife into his hand and jerked his chin at Haley. Sam dutifully went over to the Collins huddle and, grateful for his height, sawed through Tommy's ropes, no fucking around with unwrapping this time. What was Winchester up to? He cast around in the dimness, his pulse doubling. "Hey, check it out." Sam spun, nearly tripping over his own feet. Winchester was in a corner, holding up a bulky pistol. "Flare guns," Winchester explained. It must have been part of the equipment Tommy and his group had brought along, Sam realized. Winchester twirled a gun around each index finger, then looked up and grinned at the expression on Sam's face. "Come on," he said. Sam would have sworn this was the first time Winchester had actually been happy since they'd met. Sam found that he had absolutely no hesitation in following Winchester's lead. It was possible that he was in a little bit of shock. Ben and Haley wrapped themselves around Tommy, who was barely conscious, and they headed back out of the tunnels. The Wendigo's growl boomed out from the depths of the tunnel. In the darkness, there was no way to tell how close it was. "Supper time," Winchester mumbled to himself. "We'll never outrun it," Haley said calmly. "All right, listen to me," Winchester said. "Sam is going to get you out of here." He pressed one of the flare guns into Sam's hand, then pulled away. "What are you going to do?" Haley asked. Winchester was already moving down the tunnel. "Hey, sweetheart," he yelled. "You want to dance?" Sam hovered for a second. This was Winchester's specialty, but he'd already been captured once. But, "Come on," Haley hissed. They stumbled down the crumbling corridor. The next growl couldn't have come from more than 10 feet away. Sam pushed the others ahead without thinking. "Go!" They were on their own now. He turned toward the inevitable attack. The Wendigo rushed him faster than one of Ava's Ifrits. He pulled the flare gun trigger almost by accident, pushing out with his mind at the same time to keep the Wendigo away. Then he ran. The Collins siblings were just reaching the tunnel entrance when he rejoined them. He turned back, and the Wendigo was leaping towards them again. He cried out in warning, then put himself in its path so the others wouldn't see the cursed creature move so inexplicably when he knocked it back. "Hey!" Sam and the Wendigo both stopped at Winchester's yell. Then the creature's torso lit up from the inside, and Sam blinked as the Wendigo broke into flames from the flare Winchester had fired into it. He saw it clearly for the first time. A wizened brown thing like a man, half melted into a bat shape. After only a few seconds, it crisped into ash and sparks. The hike back out to a place the ambulance could reach offered plenty of opportunity to review his own performance, the way Father had always demanded. He was cold and sore, and he smelled nasty. Something squishy had gotten caught between the back of his t-shirt and the collar of his overshirt when he'd fallen down, and he already knew he'd be sorry when he saw what it was. It was almost a relief to think about the larger lessons, including that he needed to figure out how to fire a gun with his mind. More disturbing than his poor aim were the other aspects of the attack. Winchester had run towards the Wendigo like a kid running toward a carnival. Sam was good, but he'd have trouble winning the confidence of a dead man. And then, when the Collins siblings had looked at him after, there had been this light in their eyes. Sam didn't get it. Haley and her brothers had been stupid, and they'd nearly paid with their lives. They were pathetic normals, ignorant even beyond the minimal understanding of hunters. It didn't matter what they said or thought. Still, Winchester had walked a little taller, swaggering almost on those bow legs of his, on their way out of the forest. Sam eyed him and wondered how long it would take to get this job done. Yes, he itched to spread Winchester open and fucking raw, and he could have done that with or without Winchester's agreement at any time. But Father had specified real trust, accomplished without unnatural influences. So far, All Winchester had revealed about himself was a fondness for Cockrock and a strange shyness around ordinary people. That was fine. Reserve like that hid deep insecurity, meaning that when Sam got inside him, and he did intend to do that in every way possible, Winchester would be his entirely. But it meant slow going in the beginning, and patience had never been a virtue Sam pursued. As he was contemplating his next move, Winchester dropped back to maintain his pace. You did good. He looked like the words had tasted funny coming out, almost like he expected to get told to shut up. What? Sam asked automatically. You protected the civilians. Sam knew better than to confess weakness, but this was so obviously a screw-up that bravado didn't seem worthwhile. I missed the Wendigo completely, from 4 feet away. Winchester shrugged. Ever fire a gun before? Before Sam could control his expression, Winchester was already smirking, not meanly, but with a kind of indulgence. Nobody gives points for style in this gig, he said. Come on, step it up. Once we get cleaned up, the beer's on me tonight. It was oddly relaxing to sit in the passenger seat while Winchester drove and finally, unprompted, started lecturing on the supernatural. His discussions came complete with comparisons of reality to the myths propounded by TV and movies. Sam pretended to be surprised and occasionally disbelieving, just to make Winchester emphasize to him that Sam was the one with the freaky visions. He laughed a lot, and soon he didn't even have to remind himself to do so. And soon after that, Winchester started laughing with him, as if he saw for the first time how ridiculous and implausible his life was. Winchester pulled over by a deserted field, rolling the car until it was hidden by brush and cursing about the undercarriage the entire time. He made Sam take a shotgun and try to hit targets at increasing distances. With Winchester watching beside him, like some sort of cartoon sun beaming over Sam's shoulder, Sam couldn't very well just make the shot go where he wanted. "Isn't the point of a shotgun that you don't have to aim?" Sam yelled. "Can't hear you!" Winchester yelled cheerfully back. Anyhow, you graze a ghost, it's not going to stay back long. You need to get the center. After he'd pronounced himself almost convinced that Sam wouldn't accidentally shoot him, Winchester returned the weapons to the trunk of his car, and they continued on. For some reason, Sam was reminded of being 8 years old and screwing up a minor incantation. Father had made him repeat it until his fingers bled, and given what blood did to that spell, it was a lesson he didn't soon forget. That night, they stopped at a motel decorated entirely in diamond patterns. The fabric on the furniture in the lobby, the wallpaper, even the counter of the front desk. How do you even find these places? Sam demanded as they headed towards their rooms, because it had been like this every night since they'd left the roadhouse together. Winchester seemed determined to avoid anything remotely like a chain in favor of unimaginably strange and often depressing little places. Winchester gave a little smirk that brought out his dimples. Kind of a hobby. Keeps you from forgetting where you are, you know? Sam shook his head, uncomprehending, and Winchester's smile disappeared as if it had been cut off with a knife. The diamond pattern on the walls made the corridor feel like a cage, ready to close in on them until they choked. Anyway, Winchester continued grimly, it's cheaper. Sam had never thought about that, but clearly hunting wasn't a job that paid in six figures. He stopped, and Sam realized they'd reached his door. Sam's room was the one next down the hall. I didn't mean... he began. It's certainly... educational. I don't mind or anything. He ducked his head, using his bangs to get some cover, because he didn't know how to fix us. I never... My family's not big on travel. Winchester tapped his fist against Sam's forearm, gently, brushing his knuckles on the gray sleeve of Sam's sweatshirt. "Get some rest," he said, just as softly. Sam nodded and made his feet move him away to his room. He was used to having his own space. Once they'd hit puberty, none of his siblings had been fit company, and Father hadn't wanted to waste too much energy on proximity-based squabbles. But the mansion cum barracks where they'd all lived necessarily hummed with their energies. You could never assume that you were alone or unobserved. And then, when he'd been away at college, there was always someone dropping by for homework or beer or video games or something else trivial. He'd had to play his gentle, shy role full-time to avoid complications. People's opinions were formed like stones skipping across a pond, hitting only the surface. Father had taught him how to use that inattention by smiling and looking bashful. Winchester was buying Sam's story unhesitatingly, and that should have just confirmed that Winchester was no better than the rest of them. He wanted to yell at Winchester, "Don't be so stupid!" Yet Winchester was obviously not stupid. The whole puzzle made his stomach twist up and set his skin to itching. He would have gone out and found some anonymous fuck, but Winchester might hear him leave and wonder. He listened for the sounds that signaled Winchester was getting ready for the night. He imagined the layout of Winchester's room, a mirror image of his own. When he lay down, he twisted onto his stomach and put a hand up to the quilted, diamond-patterned headboard, right across from where Winchester's head might be. Right across from where he was sure it was. He would have suspected that Father had put a gaze on him, but this felt like it had always been part of him. Lake Manitowoc, at least, had nothing that threatened to eat them. Winchester fumbled Andrea Barr, the sheriff's daughter, like she was made of razors and molten glass instead of an ordinary grieving widow. Because he didn't look like the kind of man who had trouble with women, his too-wide smile came off sleazy, and she bristled right away. Then Lucas Barr showed up, and Winchester's focus swung to him like a lighthouse beam. If he wasn't careful, he was going to end up in the clink as a potential pedophile. Sam went into damage control mode, rolling his eyes at Winchester, bringing Andrea onto his side. "Sorry about that," he told her. "He really is house-trained, even if he doesn't look like it." She told them where to find the nearest motel. A few hours later, when they had more background on the series of deaths that had caught Winchester's eye, they knew that they needed to see her again. Sam would have preferred to talk to her alone, but Winchester's attention had been captured by the fact that Lucas had watched his father die. "You don't get over that," he said, his face as blank and gray as the lakefront. So they went to the park, because Sam had heard Andrea promise to take Lucas there later. She was sitting on a bench, alone, watching Lucas, also alone. The swings and slides made Sam feel too large. Father had kept a playground equipment at their compound, but only a few pieces of everything, so there was always competition. If you wanted something, you had to shove your way to the front, or ally with enough of the others that you could take turns within your smaller group. Lucas had a choice of anything, but he was just sitting at a little table, scattered with toy soldiers and crayons. "Can we join you?" Sam asked Andrea, as they stopped beside her. "I'm here with my son," she said pointedly. "Oh," Winchester said, barely looking at her. "Mind if I say hi?" He didn't wait for an answer. Sam adopted a bemused expression, pulling in his shoulders and offering Andrea a sympathetic look. She was having none of it. "Tell your friend that whole Jerry Maguire thing's not gonna work on me." He told her the absolute truth. "I don't think that's what this is all about." Over at the table, Winchester squatted down, balancing easily as the hem of his long leather jacket brushed the dirt. He touched the toy soldiers, grabbing one and dancing it around for a bit. Lucas didn't react. Then he flipped through the papers on the table, marked with blobs of color that Sam couldn't interpret from a distance. He said something to Lucas, then picked up a crayon. As he drew, he kept talking. Lucas didn't raise his head, but he didn't move away as he had earlier. Winchester offered Lucas the picture he'd drawn, then left it on the table. As he headed back to the adults, Sam saw Lucas pick it up and inspect it. Winchester wasn't smiling when he returned, which probably had something to do with Andrea's decision to talk to him. "Lucas hasn't said a word, not even to me, not since his dad's accident." "Yeah, we heard," Winchester said, sitting down at the edge of the bench and leaving several feet between himself and Andrea, still oriented like a setter towards Lucas. "Sorry. The doctors say it's post-traumatic stress?" Sam made his voice low and respectful, widening his eyes and bringing his brows down a fraction, hunting forward. "This can't be easy for either of you." "My dad helps out a lot," she said. And a shadow ran under Winchester's face, almost too fast to see. "It's just, when I think about what Lucas went through, what he saw..." "Kids are strong," Winchester said, putting his hands together between his spread knees. They can get through just about anything. Andrea sighed, her face tight with regret. You know, he used to have such life. It was hard to keep up with, to tell you the truth. Now he just sits there, drawing those pictures, playing with those army men. I just wish... She stopped as Lucas came up to them. His face was as grave as it had been the entire time. Hey, sweetie, she crooned, her voice full of yearning. Lucas raised his hand and offered Winchester a picture. Thanks, Winchester breathed. Lucas didn't acknowledge either of them, just walked back to his table. Bill Carlton, sitting on the dock and looking out at the lake that had taken both of his children, told them that losing them was worse than dying himself. Winchester seemed to crumple a little at that. He stopped trying to question Carlton, but Sam had to tug him away. He stumbled on his way back to the car. Sam put his hand out, held on so that Winchester couldn't just keep moving. "What is it?" he asked, turning Winchester so that they were face to face. The leather of Winchester's jacket was tough and cracked, nothing inviting about it. Sam leaned in, close enough that he could feel Winchester's panting breaths against his cheeks. He purged the annoyance from his voice, leaving only concern. "Come on, what is going on with you?" Winchester pulled sharply away from Sam's clutching fingers. Sam had to let go, or they'd be having a fight. "It's nothing," he lied, facing toward the Carlton house so that Sam couldn't see his face. "I just... hey!" He pulled out the picture Lucas had given him. Sam looked at it and cursed the bad timing. Lucas had drawn the Carlton house. "Sometimes, when bad shit happens, latent psychic talents surface," Winchester said, his tone indicating he'd already concluded the drawing was no coincidence. Sam hadn't gotten any sort of vibes off of Lucas, but he also hadn't been checking. If the kid had some psychic link to the killings, that did a little more to explain his trauma. Of course, if watching visions of random people die had been enough to knock Sam out, he wouldn't have survived puberty. But that was the point of Father's lessons, after all. Sam and his siblings were better and stronger than the rest. Lucas, whatever he knew, was as weak as any ordinary kid. "I'm sorry, but I don't think it's a good idea," Andrea said when they returned to her father's house. Winchester's earlier unease had been lost to his laser-like focus on Lucas. "I just need to talk to him, just for a few minutes." "He won't say anything," Andrea pointed out, her face tight with anger that she'd been forced to remind them of her son's deficiency. Sam took a deep breath and pushed the larger agenda aside. "Andrea, we think more people might get hurt. We think something's happening out there." She shook her head in automatic denial. "My husband, the others, they drowned. That's all. People drown." Winchester held his hands out like he was begging for alms. His eyes were wide, bottle green with worry, but his voice was steady. "Ma'am, please, if you think there's even a possibility that something more is happening, please, let me talk to your son." Sam and Andrea hovered at the door of Lucas's room while Winchester went in. Winchester began slow, soft, thanking him for the picture. Sam could see that Lucas had drawn a slew of new pictures. Two visible at the moment showed a red bicycle. "The thing is, I need your help again." Lucas paused in his coloring. The present drawing looked like it might be a person in water. Carefully, like he was unwrapping an ancient text that might crumble, Winchester withdrew Lucas's earlier drawing from his jacket and unfolded it. When he asked how Lucas knew to draw it, Lucas didn't even twitch. It was the same for the next question, and the same when Winchester suggested that he could nod yes or no. Sam heard Andrea's tiny sigh of disappointment. Winchester's next words riveted his attention back to where it belonged. "You're scared. It's okay, I understand. See, when I was your age, I saw something real bad happen to my mom, and I was scared too. I was all alone then. I didn't feel like talking, just like you." He stopped, drew in a shuddering breath. "But my mom, I knew she wanted me to be brave. I think about that every day, and I do my best to be brave, and maybe your dad wants you to be brave, too." Lucas raised his eyes at last. His crayon thudded to the carpet. They stayed locked like that for nearly a minute, and then Lucas reached out without looking into his pile of pictures, extracting one with a church, a house, and a boy with a red bicycle outlined against a fence. Andrea's hand went to her mouth. "Thanks, Lucas," Winchester said, but Lucas was done communicating. Andrea swept him into a hug, and she looked up at Sam and Winchester like they were half the danger to her son. Sam found her hovering a little disturbing. The drawings were not reassuring, but did she really think she could protect the kid from his own mind? It was almost enough to make Sam want to pull Lucas aside and lecture him about the frailty of others. Except that Winchester seemed to be the only person allowed inside his little circle of indifference. The next 4 hours were devoted to finding every church within a 5-mile radius of the lake, hoping for a match to the church in the drawing. Sam would have tried to get Winchester talking about his mother, but Winchester's angry concentration made it clear that any distraction would be counterproductive. Winchester really wanted to save Lucas. Not just whatever was going to be targeted next, but Lucas specifically, a little kid caught up in a bigger game. For a second, Sam wondered what it would have been like to have someone looking out for him. Him, specifically, at that same age. The thought made him twitchy, and he had to keep himself from snapping at Winchester when the first 3 churches they visited were obviously wrong. The 4th was perfect, though, and the little yellow house from the drawing was right next to it. A woman answered the door when Winchester knocked. Her hair was short and white, and her throat showed her age, the skin sagging down from her chin, but her eyes were still alive. "We're sorry to bother you, ma'am," Winchester began, "but does a little boy live here by chance? He might wear a blue ball cap, has a red bicycle." The woman took a gulping breath. "Not for a very long time," she said. Winchester's quizzical expression invited her to continue, and she did, explaining that her son Peter had disappeared in 1970. "Losing him, you know, it's worse than dying." Without thinking about it, Sam patted Winchester's back and felt the muscles jump. Past the woman's body, he saw a brace of toy soldiers set out on the table, just like the ones that Lucas Barr had started to play with after his father's death. He tapped Winchester's shoulder and indicated them with a flick of his eyes, while the woman turned to an old, faded picture just by the door. Winchester picked up the picture, examining the 2 boys and the red bicycle. Sam fleetingly wondered why the woman didn't object, but maybe anyone willing to remember her son counted as a friend. "Peter Sweeney and Billy Carlton, 1970," Winchester read from the back. So now they knew. Bill Carlton was being punished by Peter's unquiet spirit. Unfortunately, they didn't arrive in time to keep Carlton from going out in the lake, and even more unfortunately, they were then subjected to angry interrogation from the Sheriff Devons. When Andrea showed up to bring her father dinner and was summarily ordered home, Lucas actually made a noise and grabbed Winchester's arm, which seemed to shock everybody in the room but Winchester. Lucas's affinity for Winchester made Lucas's grandfather even more suspicious, and Sam answered his questions several more times, keeping the story basically true. Winchester just kept looking at the door as if he were trying to see all the way to Lucas's house, assenting to Sam's story every time he was asked. Finally, the sheriff revealed that he'd checked, and easily blown, their cover IDs. Sam refrained from reminding Winchester that he'd predicted this was going to happen. Devons kicked him out of town, which was a fine solution as far as Sam was concerned. Except that Winchester got to the edge of town and then turned away from the highway. "The case is over," Sam argued. "Peter got his revenge." "What if it's not?" Winchester asked. "What if we miss something and more people get hurt?" This was about Lucas somehow. A child alone with a parent who mourned but didn't understand. Winchester might be right. The kid was psychic and still scared. Sam didn't say anything when Winchester headed back to Andrea Barr's house. If they got arrested, he was prepared to tweak the sheriff's brain until they got free, and explain it away somehow, but fighting Winchester on this was not the way to win his trust. As soon as Winchester touched the door, Lucas flung it open, panting like he'd just run a marathon, and ran back upstairs to where water was pouring out of a closed door. Winchester managed to thrust Lucas into Sam's arms just long enough to kick the door down, and then Lucas was back on him like a leech. That was damn lucky for Andrea, because Sam doubted even Winchester's considerable physical strength would have been enough to free her from the entity holding her under the water. Sam was able to push the spirit back enough to win the tug of war before she drowned, though it was close. Afterwards, while Andrea cried and wondered if she were crazy, and Lucas watched in silence, Winchester rifled through every family memento he could find in the house. When he found an old album labeled Jake that contained a picture of Peter Sweeney and Bill Carlton with their Boy Scout troop, Andrea confirmed that her father was another scout. "Hey," Winchester said, noticing that Lucas had moved to the window. "Lucas, what is it?" They all followed him out, Andrea wincing and barefoot in her robe, to an unremarkable spot on the lawn. Winchester put his hand on Lucas's shoulder. "A shovel's in the trunk," he told Sam. At some point, Andrea forced Lucas back into the house and into bed, and then she declared herself worn out and went in herself. They kept digging. About 2 feet down, they hit dull metal, inconsistently shaped enough that they had to abandon the shovels and go to their knees. Sam wanted to stop as soon as they confirmed that it was a red bicycle. It was dark and cold, and his legs were nearly as numb as his hands. But Winchester insisted that they might need the bicycle, so they kept at it until dawn crept over the horizon, and they didn't need the flashlights to work anymore. At last, they pulled it free of the wet earth, propping it on the pile of excavated dirt. That was when Sam heard the footsteps behind them. "Who are you?" The sheriff sounded as confused as he was angry. They swiveled, Sam raising his empty hands when he saw Winchester do it. The sheriff had his gun up, moving it back and forth to target first Winchester, then Sam. "Put the gun down," Sam suggested. "How did you know that was there?" the sheriff demanded. "What happened?" Winchester asked. "You and Bill killed Peter, threw him in the lake, buried the bicycle. Nothing stays buried forever." "I don't know what the hell you're talking about." The sheriff even sounded like he wanted to believe himself. "I think you do," Winchester said, just as Andrea came outside yelling for her father. "You've got one seriously pissed off spirit," he continued. Sheriff Devins cared about his family. He'd made that clear. Sam had an idea of how to reach him. "It's gonna take Andrea, Lucas, everyone you love. It's gonna drown them, and it's gonna drag their bodies God knows where so you can feel the same pain Peter's mother felt. And then, only after all that, it's gonna take you. That's when it stops." The sheriff's hand shook on his gun. "How could you know that?" Sam spoke with pure conviction. "Because that's what it did to Bill." "You're both insane!" Winchester had the long-suffering expression of a man who heard that too often for his taste. "If we're going to stop this," he said carefully, "we're going to need to find the remains, salt them, and burn the bones. So you better tell me you didn't just dump him in the water." "Dad, is any of this true?" Andrea asked, but Sam could tell that she was already a believer, like it was just confirming something she'd always known. "No!" he barked. "Don't listen! They're liars! They're dangerous!" "Something tried to drown me," she said, her voice thin with shock. "Chris died on that lake. There's something talking to me. I think it's talking to Lucas. Dad, tell me. Oh my God." She crumpled in on herself, nearly falling to the ground. Andrew's breakdown triggered the sheriff's confession. He had, Sam supposed, little left to lose. He gave the usual excuses. They were kids, it was an accident, things just got out of control. Sam remembered that all quite well. He also remembered how very dead the victims stayed afterwards, regardless of intent. "Listen to me," Winchester interrupted. "We need to get all of you as far away from the lake as possible." Andrea gave a choked cry. "Lucas!" the sheriff yelled. They turned to see Lucas nearly at the edge of the lake. By the time Winchester hit the edge of the dock, Lucas was already dipping his hand in the water. Sam saw a hand, solid as any living human's, reach up and grab Lucas's wrist, pulling him down without even a splash. Winchester dove into the water like an arrow launched from a bow. Andrea sped up, prepared to follow him, but Sam caught her before he'd thought it through. "Stay on the dock," he warned. Winchester came up, gasping for air, without Lucas. He went down again into the black water. Sam could feel him under there, searching frantically and futilely. He'd keep going until he drowned. Even if Winchester got his hands on Lucas, Peter's spirit would resent the interference and keep them both down.
Sam couldn't beat the spirit in water, its home turf, especially not without being able to see it. He knew what he had to do. "Jake, you've got to end it now." For a long moment, the sheriff looked straight at Sam. Sam let him see it all. The contempt, the knowledge that Winchester and Sam could do nothing to fight Peter's ghost in time to save Lucas. Sam's doubt that the man would find the courage to accept the trade. In a moment, he'd give Diffins a tiny mental push, but he wanted to see what free will would do on its own. The sheriff was crying, the tears almost invisible in the weak morning light. Slowly, he waded into the lake, useless apologies spilling from him. Andrea called out to Niles, not yet realizing that she was going to lose at least one of them. Winchester emerged, looking around frantically, and saw Diffins on his way in. "No!" he yelled, joining his voice to Andrea's. "Just let it be over." The sheriff's voice broke on the last word, right before he was dragged down. Winchester dove again. This time he came up with Lucas. Andrea slept Lucas back into the house before the ambulance arrived. Winchester pointed out that sticking around as witnesses to a second mysterious watery death was a good way to get arrested, so he pulled a couple of blankets out of the trunk of his car to protect the seats from his sopping clothes, and they headed back to their motel. Winchester didn't seem to mind that Sam followed him into his room. Sam was operating on the theory that success would make him more talkative. "You really got to the sheriff," Winchester said after he got out of the shower, like he wasn't quite sure whether getting to the sheriff was a good thing. I hate trying to convince anyone about this stuff." It took Sam a moment to realize that he was talking about convincing Diffins that Peter's spirit was killing people, not convincing Diffins to trade himself for his grandson. Winchester had been underwater for that, and Sam had no plans to fill him in. Sam didn't say anything. Instead, he leaned back on the bed, putting his hands behind to brace himself, and enjoyed the view, since the towel around Winchester's waist dipped low enough to show his pelvic cut and was still too short to cover more than the upper half of his quads. "In the end, he sacrificed himself for his family," Winchester said, half to himself. "You think that makes up for what he did?" He bent over a little, his back to Sam, pulling at the towel that had been hanging around his neck and using it to rub his hair dry. If Sam had been in the same situation as Diffins, he would have hired himself far away from open water, but he guessed that the resolution had a certain symmetry. "No, it just means the ghost threatened the right thing." It took a few seconds to realize that Winchester had paused his towel rubbing in order to turn his head and stare at Sam. "Not that it did the right thing," he clarified quickly. "I mean, it had the right tactics for its objective. What do you think?" Winchester frowned, throwing the towel back over one shoulder. "I think you gotta be willing to make that sacrifice. Sometimes it's not enough, but if you don't..." He shook his head. "Family's all we have." This whole business had been nothing but an engraved invitation to inquire into Winchester's trauma. "What you said to Lucas," he began, low and careful. "You want to talk about it?" Winchester's mouth pursed up, and he dug in his bag until he found an acceptable pair of gray boxers. He dropped the towel around his waist and stepped quickly into them, then began rummaging for a shirt. Sam had to force himself not to be distracted. "I thought your visions told you everything you needed to know about me." He sat up on the bed, lowering his voice further. "It doesn't work like that. I've only seen flashes of your future. But, you know, the fact that I see your future at all means that we have this weird connection, so maybe there's something..." "Like I said," Winchester told the t-shirt in his hands, his back all clenched muscle. "My mom's dead. My dad and I watched her burn up with my brother when I was 4. His hands were strangulation tight on the fabric, bones and tendons standing out sharply. "Wow," Sam said, giving himself time to think. I'm sorry." Winchester didn't change expression, but he pulled the shirt on and started wandering around the room, touching random objects. "Yeah, well, light a candle on All Souls Day. What about you? Any family secrets you want to share?" Sam took a deep breath, preparing to give some answer that would strengthen the bond between them. Then he stopped, caught by an instinct. "All Souls Day? You're not Catholic." That's the anniversary. November 2nd, 1984, the night they died. He couldn't speak for a moment. Winchester noticed and cocked his head. Without conscious intent, Sam's voice came out a whisper. That's my birthday. Winchester went even paler, his freckles standing out on his skin, his eyes shadowed. My brother Sam was 6 months old that day. Exactly 6 months. Sam didn't have to feign his shock. This was one of the jokers up Father's sleeve. A death in the family, a boy with nearly the same name, on the very night Sam was born? That was more than coincidence. Naming him to commemorate a recent victim was just the kind of secret cruelty Father would love, which meant that the fire was a clue. That's what happened to me, he forced out. Lying to Winchester now was shockingly difficult, like swimming up from 5 fathoms deep. But if he got it done right, Winchester would be sutured to him for good. My mother died in a fire when I was 6 months old. You feel it too, right? Winchester asked, staring at the wall like he expected it to fall on him. He sounded like he was speaking from under a pile of rocks. This, whatever, connection, like you said. Sam nodded, then made himself say it out loud. Yeah. If he didn't pay attention, he found himself turning toward Winchester automatically, like a fucking sunflower sibling towards the sun. He knew when Winchester was in a room, often even in a building, without thinking about it. The only consolation was hearing that it was mutual. I feel like I've been in deep water for years, and I'm coming up for air for the first time, Winchester admitted. Sam felt a stab of something sharp and hot in his chest. If he forgot that this was all a part of Father's plan, he and Winchester were going to end up identical bloody smears on the ground. It was in both their interests for Sam to fight the impulse to spend all his time slobbering over Winchester like a kid with a new game system. Even if he really wanted to play with Winchester. Focus. Ava wouldn't let herself be diverted by squishy feelings. He needed to know more facts. Unless the whole point of this was only to distract Sam somehow. Well, why Winchester? It didn't make sense. What does Father want with you? What does it mean? Winchester asked, an echo of that 4-year-old boy who'd just lost his mother in his voice. I don't know, Sam said, keeping his hands to himself only with effort. But we're going to find out.